This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 52 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, subscribe. As I've said the last couple episodes, we're officially at 100 ratings, so let's push that to 150. Any little bit helps. So thank you, as always, for your support and the feedback that I've been getting on the episodes and all that stuff. It's been pretty good. So cool to kind of get questions from people, you know, that listen and have questions about certain parts of the episodes, that DM me. It's nice to see people who are not only listening to it, but actually like getting something out of it and, you know, learning. So I think that's like the most important thing that I try to do. And, I try to have guests on that are, you know, some of the best in the industry that I've been lucky to make connections with. And, it's awesome that it's providing that. So very cool on that note. Previous episode wise, this past week we had episode 51 with, ex-Sergo CEO Greg Lutton. That was a great episode. Greg kind of gives a little bit of a background on himself before kind of getting into what he does with ex-Sergo and, kind of what they're doing with technology and, you know, how technology can make a really big impact on the field of sports performance and strength training and, you know, programming effectively for athletes, whether it's injury prevention or, you know, adjusting programming based on readiness and fatigue, things like that. So he talks a lot about what they're doing with their tech and making it cost effective and all that kind of stuff. So definitely check that out. Week before, episode 50, Zach Evanesh, you know, Zach's obviously a veteran of the field, you know, someone that has a lot of experience training athletes and doing it in a very simple and effective way. We talk a lot about the importance of keeping things simple when it comes to training athletes and staying away from some of the flashy stuff that gets a lot of praise on social media and how some of strength training has kind of moved away from, you know, what's effective, simple, and what works in lieu of, you know, maybe what athletes aren't ready for, but looks kind of cool. So we're talking a lot about that. Definitely check that out. And then episode 49, the week before, I talked about addressing multiple needs with a training program, a solo episode, kind of breaking down my philosophy to assessing athletes, determining what they need, and if they have multiple needs, how we can address all of them at once in a program. So check that out if you're looking for kind of a breakdown on that. Coming soon, I just last night recorded an episode with Kurt, or sorry, two nights ago, recorded an episode with LA Tech football strength coach Kurt Hester. He's just a true veteran of the industry and a guy that had a lot of cool stuff to say. We did like a half hour interview, and then that episode, this will be next week. So this episode is Monday the 23rd, Monday because Christmas is a Wednesday, and I didn't want that to disrupt the flow of the episode and any kind of everyone being able to listen to it. I know everyone's busy on the holidays, so I'm releasing this Monday. And because of that, there'll be a little 9-day layover until the following episode, which will be the following Wednesday. I think that would be the, let me check the date on this. Let's see. That would be January 1st. So New Year's Day would be episode 53 with Kurt and the Q&A that I'm doing at the end of that. So really cool. He had some cool stuff to say in the time we talked. So definitely check that out. Bob Alejo, I'm working on Eric Yeagers and Rob Hill. And have Julian on, who does nutrition and also trains athletes at Challenger. He'll come on and we're going to talk about nutrition. And then I'm also working on an episode with Trey Hannum. You know, just actually got a gig with the Mets, minor league hitting coach, player development. And he's been on before and we had a really good episode. So looking forward to that. Last but not least, little tweet of the week action. This came from me. The best quote-unquote agility program is to simply get stronger, parentheses lift, faster, parentheses sprint, and improve overall power, parentheses jump, all while continuing to play your sport for authentic cognitive/visual reactivity. Be wary of the advertised agility classes, much like the quote-unquote ACL prevention classes. Basically, what I'm trying to say is agility is the comprehensive and all-encompassing strength training program that does all of those things. Agility is not something you narrow down to a couple of drills you run in a couple week class, and it's not something you can, you know, tremendously mimic other than playing the sport itself. You know, drills like reactionary drills in the weight room that are, you know, maybe stripping down some of the fitted or memorized patterns and stuff like that. can help, but I generally tend to believe that getting better at accelerating, getting stronger and be able to control your body and decelerate, and getting more athletic in the weight room when it comes to jump and sprint training and obviously lifting to get stronger, go a long way in terms of agility, because you pair the, you know, reactivity, the cognitive and visual components, that you get while actually practicing and playing your sport with the other components of, you know, being able to start more effectively, stop more effectively, stuff like that. And you have a pretty agile athlete at the end of the day when that's all done. So that was kind of what my thought process was on that tweet. And it got a lot of love, which was cool to see people agree with it and kind of support where I was coming from. So check that out if you haven't. That was this past week I tweeted that. And just one little note, before I get into this episode with Pitching Ninja and Dallas Braden, who are phenomenal, by the way. You guys are going to love what we talked about. A bunch of different things. Lifestyle lessons, learning to fail and the importance of failure, how things have changed in strength training and pitching and in baseball as a whole over the past 15 years, and how social media has played a role in that and what coaches know and don't know. And then finishing up, you know, where the direction the game is going, training, and how it's going to impact, all that type of stuff. So you guys are going to love it. But the one note I do have is, we lost or cut out audio, I think it was on Dallas's end, like maybe two or three times throughout the show. Nothing too substantial that's going to make it hard to understand or pick up on the conversation. But the one time I had to actually just have him repeat what he said because I thought, you know, it was easy to miss. So just bear with me on those. I apologize for those. But kind of, you know, comes with the territory when you're interviewing multiple people, excuse me, at once. On Skype, it could sometimes happen, especially when we're in all different areas, different parts of the country, etc. So I just wanted to make you aware of those two or three times throughout the show. Shouldn't be too much of an issue, but I'd like to make these as perfect as possible, so I wanted to apologize for that. With that said, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. They were awesome. You guys are going to get a lot out of it and enjoy it. You know, a former pitcher in the major leagues for years to a perfect game guy that's, you know, very immersed in the game now in terms of, his podcast with Barstool Starting Nine, you know, his work that he does with the MLB Network and ESPN and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously Pitching Ninja as a true champion, of the game, you know, just what he does on social media to grow the game and exposure and improving, you know, the ability for pitchers to be seen on scouting services with his flat ground, you know, accounts and the interactions he gets with the major leaguers. It's just really cool what he's done. So putting the two of them together was really fun. And, you know, I was happy to be along for the ride. So hope you guys enjoy. As always, I will see you next time. Peace. All right, everyone. Really excited to welcome on Dallas Braden and Rob Friedman. Guys, I'm really happy to have you on. Glad we can make it work with our schedules and excited to have you.
Yes, very excited. Very excited. Ready to slice and dice with the ninja.
I'm great. I'm very happy to be here.
Awesome. So I wanted to get into things right away. We're all very big into social media, obviously, on all different levels. I'm not as big as what you guys do, but I love seeing what you guys put out. And you know, Dallas, I just recently connected with you, but Rob, over the last 2 years, it's been kind of fun to watch your account grow and what you've been doing with the game and everything. But that got me to kind of want to talk about, in your opinion, how has social media really, you know, changed baseball training and pitching? Like, what has it been able to do for the game? And then I obviously all the different facets that go into it, like I said, like the training aspect and the pitching specific stuff, like what have you guys really seen, you know, and what has it really meant to you over those past, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
I'll you know what, I'll defer to Rob here because the ninja's the guy who, like I said, he's got the ginsus on the internet. So he's the one throwing you the overlays and a lot of stuff like that. So I'll let him kind of wade in early, and then I can give you that player perspective.
Awesome. And I could go on for a long time because I think it's changed a lot. You know, one of the big things I think is just giving folks access to different mindsets and different things around teaching the game is huge. I mean, everybody's sharing such great information and the ability to put it out there. And for people that even don't have big budgets to gather something for free is great. I mean, a credit to everybody that's sharing stuff, all the great coaches. Also just getting more fans into the game. I think MLB loosening their restrictions has brought in more fans because now they appreciate the aspects of pitching that maybe be, you know, kind of underrated. And I know from pitchers, I've talked to Colin McHugh last year about it. He was like, man, this is awesome because ESPN only shows us giving up dingers, and now, you know, we're heroes when we strike somebody out and, you know, make someone fall on their butt or something like that. So, yeah, even MLB guys love it because it creates a whole different kind of thing around pitching. And then the thing for me is flat ground stuff. I mean, the ability to have undiscovered people or just breaking down barriers, either economic barriers or geographic barriers, and getting both high school kids found by colleges, but also pro guys that are kind of overlooked, or folks that are looking for spots and they don't have any idea of how to get out there, and to have one medium for that they can put stuff out there and be found. That's kind of, it's been amazing, the feedback and the amount of people that we've been able to help through that. So lots of different things. And then just understand the game better. I mean, I think there were still a lot of vestiges of old school stuff where velo doesn't matter, you can't train it. And now people understanding that you actually can train it, because great content that like Jerry puts out there and tons of other folks, it's become obvious that if you're not with the kind of new school training techniques, you're being left behind. And that only goes so far by saying, pitching is all that matters. I mean, it does matter, but you're not going to get a look if you don't throw at least some degree of velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think about the draft and the way ages. There was a clear separation in the older days, I guess, in terms of how agents were able to represent, argue for, and ultimately present the case of their players in a certain way that became appealing and appetizing and convincing to the arbiters, to other GMs and front offices, so that they could drum up that interest and eventually get their players paid based on information. I think we are all privy to the Boris Binder and the stories that came with those and the paychecks that ensued. Well, the gap has closed in terms of the information that is available to him, the information that is available to me. I can know, frankly, about as much about his player as he can know. And that goes for other agents in the world. So his ability to create a story around his player, that still is an art form, and he still is a Da Vinci in regards to that. But the information, the substance of the argument is now a little more even between him and maybe, say, an agent who's just going through the arbitration or free agent process for one of the first few times in his or her very young career. So technology has allowed that gap to close to an extent. As a player, the same can be said, because to the Ninja's point, you cannot just roll the baseballs out on the field these days and think that's going to get you better, or that is the only way you're going to be able to get better. Now, there's a lot of guys who are still very old school who will never step foot into a pitching lab, if you will, and very well may find their way to the big leagues and have success, potential Hall of Fame careers. There's no arguing that, but there is no arguing that paying attention to the science behind the effort to get better is advantageous. It would behoove a young amateur player to start paying attention to that stuff now, because that is what his amateur or her amateur career is going to look like moving forward. We talk about it all the time. Kids coming from D1 programs are taking a step back when they enter rookie ball and some of these lower level pro ball minor league organizations, because they just don't have the technology and they just don't have the tutors in house to relay and translate the information. So as a young player, it is very important that you understand, and I'll just use Rapsodo and TrackMan, a couple devices like that. Say you're fortunate enough to have your hands on those devices, learn them, understand the verbiage behind them. That is where you're going to be able to get better and close the gap between you and the big donkey who's blowing 96 as a senior in high school. And you're 80 thumbing it up there, pretty confident, but it's 80. And you're going, how the hell am I going to get to D1 school? How am I going to? Well, you know what? The answer may lie with you being able to understand and unlock the athlete within you. And it all starts, the operative word, gentlemen, is you.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I think something you brought up that I find interesting as well is like, it really hasn't been a top down trickle effect of like, oh, you know, this stuff originated in professional baseball and went down to college, went down to high school. It really kind of went the opposite way. Like you alluded to, like
yes.
You had private instructors, especially with Twitter now, like how many coaches we saw last year and this year get, you know, hired, you know, from their work, the stuff that they're putting out on Twitter, how it's been kind of backwards in terms of private trainers, you know, working with high school kids in Iowa are buried away, and 10, 15 years ago, you would have never heard of them. Well, and they put a video out now.
It's low,
and you see their
low risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yep. It's low risk, high reward to install these approaches at an amateur level where you're not, I mean, you're not ruining a guy's earning power, yeah, like in his pre-platform year by trying to tweak something and have him approach something in a different manner. No, instead you're taking the kid who's just, you know, come crawling out of a science lab, like a literal science lab, doing his chemistry report. And now you get to like kind of manipulate him or her and mold these young players in a certain way. And I think that's where it has to start. Because you're trying to build. That's why the universities look, I mean, they know that they've got these. I mean, I don't know that it can be said with certainty to the extent it was in prior years, but you get a kid freshman year. Why would you not invest in this individual that you could have potentially for the next 4 years? Should they not transfer, or should there not be some crazy sex scandal at your university? Like, whatever. Let's say they're there. Like, why would you not invest in that child? And that's what the amateurs. That's what the amateur ranks have done. That's why the football programs look the way they look. Those institutions look the way they look, is because that's money's coming in, and the athletes got to get on board.
Oh, to that point, that's great. That's exactly right. And I think it gives the opportunity for smaller schools and really good coaches to kind of coach players up by using technology and using kind of the latest cutting edge stuff, where maybe they find the hidden gem that larger schools are always going to have a recruiting advantage. But if you're a better coach, you may be able to close the gap. And one thing that I think we can give some credit to is, we've mentioned that it started from the bottom up, but Trevor Bauer has been very, very influential in things like Edutronic and Rapsodo. And, you know, I think when you take a step back, he was the first guy to bring Edutronic, for example, to Driveline. And now every major league team uses that. So the guy that people, you know, either love to hate or love to love, has had a huge impact on the game. It's just kind of cool to look back to where the game was before him and where it is now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dude who was getting ridiculed for bringing his body blade into spring training, right? With a case and everything. Who the hell is this guy? Oh, well, this is a guy who, for better or for worse, in your opinion, I don't think there's any denying it, has brought the game along in a way that I don't think anybody expected to. If you were standing back looking at him in his locker with his body blade case, that's not the guy that you're thinking is bringing high-speed technology, pitch design, and tunneling into our game to the extent that it now exists. Like, and that's what's great about it.
Yeah, exactly. And as you would know, I think most players want to conform, especially when you're new to the game and you're new to a franchise, and they're telling you have to do it this way. And his fighting against that and really taking on personal risk to do it. Actually, it's personal risk, I guess, if you don't advocate for yourself, too, because you're forced to conform and then not do what you need to do to be successful. But his ability to do that and put his own career at risk at that point and speak up was huge, and you didn't know how it was going to turn out. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I think just even from like my perspective of kind of seeing it, is even in the last like 2 or 3 years, like I've really only, I guess I could say, become active on Twitter for the last 2 years or so. And what I've seen in just that short time with how accepted a lot of this stuff is, like I see people tweet all the time about, oh, like you would never have seen, or you would have had pitchers sneaking plyo balls into the bullpen area during spring training, or, you know, maybe a high school kid would never even have heard of it. And now it's like you have, you know, pro teams, Twitter accounts, literally putting up videos of guys using them. And like you said, Trevor Bauer, like to have someone of that stature show that he was going to, one, kind of advocate for himself, like you said, and push to do it. But like he was going to make sure that he did it his way, and he's had success doing it that way. It went a long way into allowing everyone else to kind of follow that same path, so to speak.
Well, and what I think just to kind of like put a bow on how the technology has affected the game, not only as I kind of mentioned in the negotiation side of the game, but now in the way that you're assessing and analyzing not only players, but their movements. I mean, if we're, you know, we're not going to get into the nuts and bolts of the base running and stuff, but I mean, one of the main reasons that I think we're all here today is because of a comment that I made on a video about a very talented Ronald Acuna and his base running, and something that I noticed, and it was coming from, and then Jerry starts to defend, or I don't know if defend is the right word. He starts to explain the efficiency in which Ronald Acuna is utilizing his body to get from first to second. And what's great is from a baseball perspective, the efficiency in which he is moving still gives me a window to assess and look for an opening, but it offers an opportunity for individuals to learn that, hey, you know what? While this might be your opportunity to pick him off or to assess him as slightly inefficient in this movement might be the most efficient that can be made in an effort to get from first to second. So for conversation's sake, you watch Ricky do it. Ricky does it as good as it's ever been done. Anybody else is always fighting for second place.
Yep.
And to watch the movement specifically, the same rings true for that movement. The same movement that I told Ricky about when we were on a backfield working on my pickoff move for 40 plus minutes, myself and Ricky Henderson. And that's why that conversation really struck me, is because I'm thinking, and you know, 240 characters, just not enough for us to be able to hash it out like we are now. But that's what technology provided, was us to be able to have that back and forth, that engagement, and eventually lead us here to where we can discuss body movements. We can discuss base running. We can discuss what I'm looking for as a pitcher in these great athletes. And again, the technology, gentlemen, and Jerry specifically, is what closed the gap between myself and somebody like a Derek Jeter. I'm not throwing him out there as a great base runner, but being able to watch him, how he took leads at first base, knowing that there's a solid chance he might be standing on first base against me instead of an out. He might be on second base. But if in the event he's on first base, why don't I watch to see how he goes about his business? And he went from a guy who got a lead against me one time to never getting a lead against me ever again in his life because I embarrassed him, all brought to you in part by technology, because I was able to watch how he took leads.
You know, I wanted to focus on something you just said and just bring it out a little bit. But the fact that you're able to have a conversation and you're open-minded to hearing other things, and I think that's something that can be missing by people to get stuck in the past and that are unwilling to learn, is they just think they have everything figured out. But the ability to take technology in there and listen and have a conversation about it and learn from it and hear the other person. You can challenge the other person, but you have to listen to what they're saying in response and then say, maybe they have a good point. I mean, most people, I mean, I think it's important to do that. And the way Ricky Henderson's learning off you, I mean, that's the growth mentality that you need to be successful. If you think you have everything figured out, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, I mean, even to say, like, me as a strength guy, like, one afternoon I get tagged a couple times. Like, so Dallas, you put that post up about Acuna, and I get tagged in it like 5-6 times. And I comment, we go back and forth, and next thing I know, I'm DMing you about a conversation you have with Ricky Henderson. My mind's blown. I'm like, holy crap. Like, I just went from, like, a mini argument about the drop step to, like, talking to a guy that, you know, pitched in the bigs for a while and got to work on his pickoff move with Ricky Henderson. I'm like, I can't, my mind was like, just the technology and the ability to like have those conversations. We wouldn't have been able to do that, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Like it, you know, you talk about the benefit of the player, but even like coaches like me who get to, you know, broaden their perspective and, you know, I get to sometimes, look at the gray area, like, you know, things I would never think of when teaching the mechanics of a sprint in terms of like, oh, like the pitcher's going to be thinking about this or doing that. Like it's invaluable for sure.
That's what was so cool. And Rob, to your point, I guess I'll say thank you that I'm being open-minded. I don't think that wanted. I think you, if your heart is in the right place, you are genuinely interested in learning about the game. there's going to be answers that come from places that you just never expected, and you're cheating yourself, and you're cheating somebody who might look at you as somebody to learn from. You're cheating them too if you just continue to try to filter out information based on the status of somebody, based on where the, like, no, I've always said there's advice, there's good advice, there's bad advice, there's advice that's better than other advice, but there's never advice you don't want to hear, because it can help you in some form or fashion. I truly believe that. So, like, for us to be able to have that conversation, and again, I would tell Acuna, hey, clean it up, because you can get that drop step down to about an inch and a half worth of movement instead of where I saw it. So you can be better. That's a great movement. You're right. These guys are elite, but the technology, again, it can close that gap if you use it. So allow your mind to be open. Allow a strength coach to be able to tell you, hey, you know what? This is the best way for these guys to be able to execute this movement. And then hopefully you run into the strength coach that I run into that says, but you know what? I can understand how that might be your window of opportunity. Very interesting. Let's talk about this.
Yep.
That is awesome.
Absolutely. Yep.
Totally agree.
Yeah, I think it was just a cool day for me for sure. And it turned into being able to have two guys like you come on together on the show. And, you know, I'm fanboying over here, but In the same vein, kind of a segue off that topic about the drop step, because it brought us into a little bit of a conversation about your time in Oakland with Bob Alejo. And I wanted to ask you at first, like, what have you seen change in terms of what you did in your strength training, you know, in the bigs, in high school, college, whatever. But realizing that having a guy like Bob in Oakland, like, you were doing a lot of the same stuff that we're doing now, because he's awesome.
Right.
But even with that said, though, like, I'm still sure that you saw things being done in other organizations that didn't have him. So you can kind of answer this twofold, what you did with him and then kind of what you saw differently that others were doing. Because he was kind of, I would say, very niche at the beginning, like, of what he was doing with you guys in Oakland that wasn't being done elsewhere. So I guess maybe a little bit of what your experience was with him and then what you've kind of seen change over the last 10 or 15 years that wasn't being done that's being done today.
Yeah, I think just based on the history of where I came from, so amateur level and junior college, look, I had a rubber arm in terms of I could just use it. I was throwing. So the idea of lifting and getting stronger to do what I was already doing, I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. These guys have to work really hard in the weight room. I can go out and throw all day. They're dumb. Well, that got me only so far. I got to Texas Tech. Realized, hey, son, you're going to have to put some meat on those bones. All right. Stiff wind's going to blow you off the mound out here in West Texas. So we're going to have to anchor you down. And that's when learning how to take care of my body, learning what I was going to do to my body was going to affect my body the next day, really, really took hold on a different level. So Tori, I forget his last name, was our strength and conditioning guy at Texas Tech. And he really opened my eyes to a whole new world of taking care of yourself physically and the rewards that came along with that. And the idea of, you know, your body is a gas tank and filling it up instead of, you know, filling it up with other things doesn't really work out. So I get to Oakland and that organization. And if I'm being quite honest, the idea of strength and conditioning was more about maintaining what I guess you already have. But if you're coming in looking like you, Dallas, we need to put some meat on your bones. So there was that constant effort to just try to get the skinny guys bigger and stronger. But in terms of like forward thinking and really progressive approaches, that didn't really exist. It maybe did at the big league level where Alejo was around prior to me getting to the big leagues, but he came back around for his second tour. And that's when him and I hooked up. And I mean, I could feel myself just sort of take that next step because Bob, and I love this about him. I don't know if he still rolls this way. I think he's still at Northridge. I don't know if he rolls this way,
yeah.
But he's got everything written down. He's got it all written down, not punched into a laptop, not punched into an iPad or whatever, which there's no problem with that, but he was writing it down. And it was awesome for me to walk into the weight room and be able to see my progression in real time and then just be able to thumb back through it. And it's like, oh, what a novel idea. He was writing down your, but it was more about giving me an understanding of when to choose my hard days, when to choose my off days. And realizing there are no off days. It's always about maintaining your body to some extent. just listening to your body and allowing it to tell you what you can do today, what you're capable of today. And that was the really eye-opening experience for me. Not so much to get into like specific body movement and specific drills that we were executing. It was just more about learning and becoming in tune with your utensil, your body.
Yeah. No, I think that's one, the point you made about him writing everything down, just, you know, so different from what it is today. And listen, I'm a young guy. I'm new in the game. So I'm obviously putting stuff into a computer, but it doesn't mean that it's not just as important. Like you said, it can be, it's really significant to let the athletes see where they're going, where they started, where they have to get to. Even if it is at a laptop, like pull them over to the laptop and show them what's on the laptop.
And, well,
like,
and what was cool too, what was cool about I used to call him Big Bob Little A, because on his email, that we got in spring training, his first name, like three capital letters, B-O-B, and then dot little, you know, lowercase a. So Big Bob Little A would always, you know, like I'd be getting text messages, getting to the ballpark, like, this is what we got today, kid, blah, 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 blah. Here's what the running's going to look like, blah, blah. So that was great for me. That was awesome. And there was a point in time where I could feel myself, even through my maintenance programs, getting stronger. And that's a really good feeling. And you want to talk about instilling confidence in an athlete, it's awesome to get on the leg press and be able to throw on a couple extra plates in August and be like, oh, wow, you know what? This is because of the money I put in the bank in February. This is because of the money I put in the bank in March. This is why I'm able to do this right now. And that was comforting. And for Frank, I mean, 2011, I spent basically the entire year blowing out my lower half because my arm hurt. My arm was toast. It was done. So I was coming to the yard every day just doing legs. And that was fun, because it was like Bob was just throwing, you know, new stuff at me to try to do. And then before you know it, here I am, like, you know, 180 pounds banging out 385 and just having fun doing it. And it was really exciting, but it sucked because I couldn't pitch.
Rob, what do you think is, like, if Twitter had come along 15 years ago? So here's my take on this whole thing. I would say in the strength and conditioning side of things, kind of meshing with baseball, a lot has happened in the past decade or so in terms of maybe what had been more focused or centralized and not as broad. So maybe at the high school level, you know, guys were still running 3 miles after they pitched, or not lifting weights because they didn't want to get quote unquote bulky or whatever. But at the MLB level, you had guys that were doing things the right way, whatever it was. Twitter came around and it allowed a lot of coaches to kind of get their thoughts out there on the right way to do things. But do you think if Twitter had kind of blown up 15 years ago, that you would have seen a lot of the same coaches, like a Ben Brewster, a Tread, you know, a Driveline? Do you think guys that were emphasizing the weightlifting and getting stronger and getting more powerful would have been there as well? Or do you think it's more of like it took time and it had to develop without the social media first? Like, do you think the chicken before the egg kind of scenario, like, what do you think really kind of fostered that?
You know, I think it's more that it took time to measure the results. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the right time for that stuff to have come about. I mean, obviously traditionally in baseball, it was always, you're either born with it or you're not. If you're throwing hard, you're throwing hard because you had some natural talent. And obviously you have some natural talent, but the ability is to get the most you can out of that. And I think that the measurability of it has been more recent. The focus on, well, number one, the adage used to be that velocity kind of didn't also matter. I mean, it was how you pitched, and now people are realizing that, wait, you're judged on velocity, so we're gonna have to train that. And there's money in it. I mean, there's either scholarship money or there's signing bonuses and contract value that can be tied back to all that. So I think that it's more. It's just evolved over time. You have folks like Eric Cressy.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed it.
But Eric is at the forefront of
Sorry,
that.
Eric.
I don't see. Yeah. No, he'd kill me if I didn't mention him. and a great guy. I mean, he's really kind of my mentor when it comes to all that. And Tread is fantastic. I mean, Ben is taking all this stuff and to the next level. He really taught himself, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
But what you're seeing, and I'm sure you see it out there. What I'm seeing even today are people focusing more on just pure strength? They don't care about form. They're just like, hey, I lifted all these plates, and their form may suck. And I know Eric's chimed in a few times, Cressy on Flat Ground, where he's like, you know, you may want to back off the weight and get your form right, because strength over full range of motion is more important than just lifting a bunch of weight off the ground. It looks impressive. I mean, you know, deadlifting 600 pounds is awesome, but if your form sucks, you're not getting the full benefit of it. So things like mobility also, I think, would be overlooked. You'd have a lot of football coaches coaching baseball back in the day and just saying, hey, it's all about getting big and getting strong. But there are different muscles used in pitching than there would be in you know, the linemen. So it really has been customized, and the ability to have strength coaches focus specifically on baseball and the throwing motion and getting better at that, I think, is huge. Yeah, folks like yourself, Cressy, Tread, it's great. And as a pitching coach, you should be learning from these guys. You should be making sure you're not, you know, your players are using proper form. Every kid wants to lift a lot. I mean, it just looks cool, and they're competitive, so they want to lift the most. But doing it the right way, I think, is very important, and an area where we still can do better.
Yeah. I think even like when I was coming up, and I want to kind of, Dallas, I want to hear kind of what your high school training experience was like. But I remember even when, you know, 10, 12 years ago, so I'm 25, I'm young, 10 years ago being 15, and my dad kind of like was a old school bodybuilding, you know, knowledge. He was a, you know, brick house and could lift the house. But he used to tell me, oh, like, you don't want to get, and this is what my pitching coach would tell me back at the time, you don't want to get too big and bulky. It'll slow you down. So, oh, go lift, you know, lightweight for higher reps. Little did we know that that's the best way to put size on. But what, Dallas, what was like, you know, kind of your high school experience? Like, I like to bring high school up a lot because I do have a lot of young listeners and even high school coaches and stuff. And I think it's important, you know, even, you know, for me, 10 years ago, me in high school, like, what has changed so much now from what I see high school kids doing now? What kind of things were you doing? And was it anything, like, were you doing any type of like, oh, focus on getting stronger or whatever? That didn't really happen until you got to A&M, like you said.
Yeah, no, Texas Tech, A&M, get out of here with that.
Oh, my bad, Texas Tech. My
Let's
fault.
Go.
Wow. Red,
that's record. My bad. Hey, I am a meathead.
No,
so.
I mean, if I'm in, look, full disclosure, you want to talk about meathead, you're talking to another one. I only played 2 years of high school baseball. So,
okay.
My senior year, we'll take it there, because that's the most important year that I played. Okay. I played my sophomore year and my senior year. So my senior year, there was no weightlifting. No, what I was, and I had my coach. One of my coach was a Vietnam vet. My other coach was a ex pro baller. Frank Martinez pitched for the White Sox for a little while. But his big focus with me, because, and this is, I guess this kind of speaks to
You cut out for a second. You want to repeat that?
I said I was throwing like maybe 84, okay. 85, I think I topped out at, and he knew that I wasn't going to be blowing anybody away. I mean, that was okay for high school. But his big focus was to strengthen my arm through a throwing program. He wanted me to play long toss. So that's where my focus was playing long toss. Like, I was trying to throw the ball over the center field wall. Like that's just the dumb stuff, quote unquote, dumb stuff that I was doing. But that's where my focus was. And then we quite literally had the tennis ball canisters emptied out, obviously, and then filled up with sand and duct tape over them. And I would go through a shoulder job routine to work my delts, to work my shoulders. And that was the extent of my weight training as a senior in high school.
The one positive thing, though, I mean, the throwing program, I mean, that is one thing that you know, has gotten more respect, I guess, today through Alan Jager, I guess, really championing that. But the ability to long toss and get your body in sync and not be restricted. You know, not saying I'm just going to go out to 90 feet and throw, I'm going to go and let it eat. I think is really important in velo development. And there's still even a few major league teams that put restrictions on players about how far they can go out. That I know Alan's been championing, like the reverse, to kind of undo that. But so that part is really kind of solid work by your coach.
Yeah, it was cool because I mean he did a great job of making it fun. And I don't know if it's look, he was going to have me for that year, right? So he could only do so much with me. And credit to him, he was able to identify that I had a very good feel for pitching at that age. I knew and understood the value of the changeup already. Wow. I even had a curveball when I was in high school, which was like another weapon, but he understood that I knew how to pitch. So instead of taking me into the weight room and utilizing our time together in that fashion, he kept us in our office basically. And so I got very well adapted to a throwing program very early on. So when I hit junior college, it was already like the idea of us trying to get out as far as we could, as quickly as we could. That was something I was already used to doing or prepared to do. And then when I got to pro ball, that was the same sentiment. Is we had these cones set up by Ron Romanek, our pitching coordinator. I absolutely love that man, just because of his passion for the game, his passion for the knowledge to learn more. And like, I would laugh at him setting up these cones like, Ronnie, well, would you forget how to play catch? You forget how far you needed to throw the baseball? Like, what happens if the cones aren't set up or they're set up in the wrong direction? I'm going to end up throwing this baseball. I'm going to throw it into the stands, Ronnie. I don't know. You better have these things pointing in the right direction. You're going to get somebody killed. You better figure it out. But it was great because I had already had that foundation laid for me. And it was like, when I look back, it's cool to think that I had individuals who had all walked very different paths, sort of the same mindset, because I got to junior college, my head coach there, a grizzled vet of the New York Penn League and pro ball in Kevin Higgins. And so there was no fiddling around. We were going to get to work each and every day with a purpose. And that also, I mean, that did so much for me.
You know, one point that you made, and this is something as somebody who coaches high school too, it is a lot of it. There's only so much you can do. You only have the players for so long. And I think I think we're speaking to parents as well as players themselves. You got to own your career. And to take this knowledge, you should be on Twitter yourself, not just coaches learning, but parents and players learning, and seek out the folks that seem to make the most sense training wise and realize that every day you should be trying to get better every day, regardless of whether you're in high school season or travel ball season. You know, you have various coaches and they may not all know what they're doing. So it's your career. I think you should take ownership of it and find the best information. That's kind of what I try to do online is make sure that everybody has. I know some people, it's hard to afford stuff, or you want to, our coach is telling you one thing and you think another thing. I try to put out what players are doing and what the best people in the industry are doing so that players can learn themselves and say, you know, coach, I'm not sure this is right. Or the coach learned, you know, what other people are doing and the coach maybe can correct it. But I think the limited time that high school coaches have, especially now with travel ball season and stuff, it's tough to get a lot done and players got to do it themselves.
I want to ask you guys this before we might move on. Do you ever bring in, I don't know if you guys do individualized training or anything like that. I've worked with some kids just here in the neighborhood because I don't like to get out there and like, you want help, you want to learn the basics here, let me help you. But I bring the parent in. Like, you're not going to stand over there and like thumb up and down on your phone. You're not going to be gramming over there and tweet boxing for an hour while I babysit your child. That's not what we're doing. That's not what I'm here to do. So the parent is as involved in this lesson as the child, because if you're investing in your child enough, or to the extent that you've brought them to somebody to learn at the next level, you are going to benefit as well, because they're going to look at you and ask you, or you're going to be watching them sometime when I'm not around. you should probably understand some of these things they're working through as well. You should understand some of the cues that we're working on so that you can identify, or that you can help your young athlete identify within themselves things that are going on. So the parent, you're as much a part of this as well. Your investment doesn't stop at writing the check or handing over the $20 bill or whatever it is. That's not where the investment stops. That is merely where the investment has begun.
God bless you, because I think a lot of coaches are, and private coaches as well as, you know, coaches at every level, are a little afraid of having parents involved because parents will second guess them or try to do it, you know, whatever they'll do. I think, to me, if I can't explain something to a parent and a kid of why they're doing something, then maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
and,
maybe. I
mean, yeah, so it's up to me to. Yeah, so someone asks a good question, my job is either to answer it based on my knowledge or to go find the answer or to say, I don't know. But those are all very important, and have a parent involved. Yeah, it's your kids. Parents, so kids have a very short attention span. They want to do something that's good for them today. They don't have a long-range outlook on it. And as a parent bringing up a kid, your job is to keep the kid focused on near term, obviously, because you want them to be happy and get their stuff done. Because if it's not fun for them and they're not having a good time, they're not going to do it. But also have the long range plan for the kid, if whatever their goal is. I don't care if it's baseball or if it's being a great pianist. Whatever it is, you know, fantastic. You can help your kid along by just having just the long range goal, but don't overdo it. You know, parents can be too manipulative and try to get their kid away from the fun aspects of it. And you're going to work as hard as you can. And, you know, there's a balance that you need to strike, I think, as a parent. That's tricky, because all parents want the best for their kid.
If you love it enough, this is what I tell kids. If you love it enough and you're lucky enough, it'll become work later. If you're lucky enough.
And
when you start to wrap your head around that, we all understand it's never work. And it was never work. But you don't understand that, Rob, to your point, as a young athlete, as a young child, let's do this. Let's play catch. And then give me my blow pop. What's on television? Fortnite. And that's, you know, and that's like the mental cycle of these young kids. So, I think it's very important that the parent has involvement. And again, the investment doesn't stop at just dropping them off.
Yeah, my rule always was for my own kid was get your schoolwork done, homework, tests, studying, all that stuff. Get your whatever sport you're in at that point. Get whatever work you need done. If you're not in a sport, then get your lifting done, and then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
If you've gotten those two things done, go play Fortnite. I don't really care. Go have fun at Call of Duty.
Yeah. To answer that question on my end, I would say the lifting side of it is a little different, only because maybe in like a particular time, I like to say that unless I'm talking, and here's me going on like 1400 tangents in my head again, but like, unless you're talking about sprinting, where I would say, okay, I can compare like teaching sprinting to like, you know, you working with a pitcher on their delivery, or a hitting coach working on, working with a hitter, like where one thing we do in a session per se could change everything. Lifting is more of like 1 month equals like one session of like hitting or pitching in my mind, because, you're not going to just come in for that one lift on Wednesday and not come back till the following Thursday and get as much out of it. Whereas like you can do that with pitching and find three mechanical adjustments and then go home and work on them. And, you know, you may have, you know, covered a lot, right? So I like to look at it in terms of the parents. Like if they want to be there, I am 1000% cool with it. I have some that don't want. I have some parents that are so reverse programmed now to not even want to come in because they feel like they've been made to seem like they shouldn't be there, which I think one is a problem, like you guys alluded to, like they need to be a part of the process. But if I have parents that aren't comfortable being there, I guess my outlook on it at this point is to include them, whether it's talking to them after the session's over and kind of giving them an idea of what we're trying to accomplish and what our goals are. But I think another part of it that's made, you know, coaches' jobs easier, especially someone like me who's very involved on, if you go on my Instagram and, you know, I'm posting stories of what we're doing in the gym that day, I'm posting, you know, a post a day on some kind of exercise we're doing, the parents can really get a, you know, insight on what the child or what the athlete is doing, even if they're not there. So that helps, first of all. But I think the biggest thing is just for them to understand the mission and the goal of what we're trying to accomplish so they can just assist in it as much as possible. I love fielding the questions. I'll sit there and talk to someone about something, even if they don't answer me for an hour. But if the parent isn't comfortable with that, I'm fine. And I also do find that when the athlete is more responsible for, you know, scheduling their sessions and all that kind of stuff, it, in my field at least, it does tend to bode well for me, because it's, they'll take more responsibility for doing their extra work, whether it's, you know, getting their protein shake to have after they're done training, making sure that's ready, making sure their meals are ready for throughout the week so they get their nutrition right, making sure that they're doing their mobility work and movement work the 2 or 3 days a week that I don't have them. So it's a double-edged sword, I think, for me, just because it's a little different than talking about the skill work of, you know, hitting or pitching, that I do need to make sure there is some kind of autonomy for the athlete, that they know what they have to get done, and then I let the parent know as well so they can support them in that, if that makes sense.
Oh, makes total sense. Yeah, you've got to be able to let your athlete learn on their own, fail on their own, grow on their own, because mom and dad are not going to be able to be there every step of the way. Eventually you have to leave the nest.
Yeah.
And I think my sentiment is just understanding that if you're not going to be a part of the process as a parent,
oh, it's useless.
I mean, come on, you're not doing anybody any.
I tell parents all the time, like, I love that you're here. Like, I want to see you. I want you to see what you're spending your money on. First of all, like you said, you're investing. You're literally taking money out of your pocket and your money that you work for, and you're trusting me, which is humbling in itself. Like, I take that. Like, I don't want to say nervous is a bad word per se, but I take it very seriously. Like, there are people out there, and I could never imagine how they have the mindset to do it, that, like, they just con people and take their money and do horrible, like, maybe some of it's not intentional, they don't know any better, but some people literally know that they're just taking people for a ride, and it's eyewash what they're doing, and they're taking, like, if someone's spending their money and giving it to me, and they trust me to, like, say, okay, like, my son or my daughter, I'm gonna spend money on them and take them to you because I've heard that you can help them. Like, it's an honor that they would think that I'd be that person to spend money on to help their kid. But, like, I have a big responsibility to make sure that I'm giving them tools while they're here and also when they're not here. I have to teach them more just beyond do these three exercises. It's okay. Like, here's what you're doing at home. Here's what the habits have to be that you're instilling in yourself. And I think, you know, when the parent's there, it could be really helpful to let them kind of get insight on what the process is that we're doing. And if they don't want to be there, I'm not going to force them to be. I give them that right. choice. Like, it's, if you want to be here, the door's open, let's talk. And if you don't, then we'll go from there.
You know, Dallas touched on something really important. I think almost inadvertently is the ability to let your kid fail is something that's kind of overlooked right now. Is parents, they're doing it out of the kind of an almost good motivation, in that they don't want to see their kids suffer. They want to see their kid have everything they didn't have. But the ability to let your kid fail and earn something and learn from those mistakes is something that's really overlooked by parents, for their hearts, again, in the right place. But it's things like training, you know, not getting a lift up, or pitching, sucking, having a bad outing. Yeah, it sucks as a parent to watch your kid go through it, but it's a necessary process, and it's developing something. If your kid doesn't like failing, then work harder to not fail. Oh. But parents don't like to let their kid do that.
Rob, I feel like you were in my yesterday, because and she's not even three. She's not even two and a half. She turned two in August. And I mean, she kills it. She absolutely kills it. And she was running up this ladder. She has to climb the ladder and go down the ladder. Something she has done, she could do in her sleep. For whatever reason, yesterday, she got up to the top of the ladder and was struggling, swinging her leg over. Couldn't do it. Well, it was because she was trying to do it from a lower rung than she had ever done it before. Mm-hmm. So, but she wasn't really processing that. She wasn't getting it. And it was pissing her off, and there was a Santa Claus stamp to be had on the other side of this ladder. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of little kids went home with a Santa Claus stamp yesterday, and there were a lot of little kids who didn't make it all the way over the top of that ladder that also went home with a Santa Claus stamp yesterday. And there was a little girl who did not go home with a Santa Claus stamp yesterday, because there was a little girl who did not make it over the top of the ladder yesterday. And there were a lot of parents who were looking at one dad going, "It's Christmas. Just give her the damn stamp." And I'm going, It might be Christmas in your household. It's learning and training day every day in my household.
I love
and,
that.
Yeah, and that's awesome. That's great. I love that.
She didn't get the stamp, man. She didn't get the stamp.
Yeah, but she's gonna, I know she's three, but she's gonna learn from that.
Oh, that and brother, that's every day for her. Yeah. That's every
but
day.
She's gonna
for
be better.
Her,
so. She's gonna be better because of it. Like, she's lucky she has, you know, a parent that's instilling that, you know, in her. I mean, listen, there's a clear difference between being too much over the top, but like, there's a difference between that and like, even my little nephew, like my sister told, he said to my sister one day, "Mom, am I the smartest, you know, kid in the world?" She was like, "No, like, you're very smart. You're a smart boy, but no, you're not." And he got mad. He was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You're my mother." It's like, he's four. And he got that. He was like, "You're supposed to tell me I'm the smart." She was like, "No, like, that's not realistic. Like, you're not the smartest."
Exactly. And I think it's also with respect to giving your kid feedback. I think looking at your kid in an outing or whatever and saying, "Oh, that you were awesome. The ump screwed you," or whatever, your players behind you didn't do their job. That's not sending the kid a good message. I think honest assessment of where your kid is important for overall development. And I love the fact of having to earn that stamp. I mean, it's way easier as a parent to go out and you don't want to see your kid cry. You don't want to see your kid upset and you go give them something. But in the end, they're never going to feel like they earned it. And I think it causes problems later on.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. And what was cool, and just to your point, like, I don't want to continue to brag about my awesome daughter. I think we would all do that given the time.
Oh, she's awesome. Absolutely. I was there.
but we got home and I have built just a little like a walking beam elevated off the ground about a foot and a half, 2 feet, whatever it is, for her to walk on because she likes to do that. Well, she didn't get her stamp because she didn't go over the ladder. She got home and she wanted to go out on the beam. Because there's beams at gym class, right? Mm-hmm. So in my head, and I don't know the psychology behind this, but I thought to myself, and I believe this to be the case, she got pissed off that she didn't get her stamp. And she's like, "All right, well, you know what? I'm going to come home and I'm going to do awesome stuff I know how to do. And I don't, you know, I'm not even going to need this stamp because gym class exists at home. So I'm going to go dominate the beam for a little while. And then I'm going to get to color." And that's exactly what she did. So she came home, dominated the beam, and was like, "All right, Dad, can I color now?" And I was like, "Absolutely. Play-Doh. Let's get the paints. Let's go ham." And it was because she got in my head, it's because she got frustrated. She didn't like the results. She didn't get what she wanted. So she came home, did what she wanted, and then like created the reward in her head. Like, "All right, I've done that. Now I get to paint, and now I can do this. So I will do what I want. I will get it done somehow. But I'm going to find a way." And that's what I want to see. Those are the wheels I want to see turning.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And it's going to pay off later on, no matter whether she wants to be a gymnast or whether she wants to be whatever.
Yeah. Anything. I could care less. You know what I'm saying? You have to sweep that parking lot and clean those softy machines every single day. Well, I don't care what you do.
Right. Yeah. It's so easy to carry your kid's bag and to do all that stuff because it gets you there quicker. But in the end, it's them that has to do it, and they have to learn the ability to do that hard work, to not feel shitty about whatever.
Yeah, I would even say, like, just one more thing on this topic before we go, you know, onto the next area. But like, I would say that the failures I experienced, even like, you know, trying to play Division I baseball out of high school, and I ended up making which I guess at the time was a rare decision because everyone's always obsessed with D1. I ended up picking D3 over some of the not as much guaranteed D1 opportunities that I might have had because I wanted to play. And then I go the D3 route, and just I had one of the worst careers I could have ever possibly had. But it really, like, I don't think I'm doing what I'm doing right now to the level that I am if it wasn't for going through that and my parents looking at me and just being like, "Dude, like, I think it's time to hang it up. Like, you're not doing it." Like, I end up transferring my second school, and it's like, it couldn't hit. And my dad was like, "Yeah, I think it's time to call it a day on this. Like, start looking at some other stuff to do," versus him saying, "Oh, you're great. Let's go pick another school." Like, whatever. I wouldn't have been here. So I think even at whether you're three or whether you're 21, I think it's like something that's important to have instilled in you. Like, it's not always the other person's fault that you didn't do well. Sometimes you just aren't cutting it, and you need to either look in the mirror and go move on to something else, or whatever it is. And I think I can definitely attest to that and agree 1,000% that I personally wouldn't be where I am right now if it wasn't for the fact that I had to be very realistic with myself, and my parents helped me with that and say, listen, like, you know, baseball's, you know, on the way out for you right now, and you got to look into something else. And this was something else for me. So I think that's just really well said. And I'm happy we didn't plan on talking about that, but I think that's awesome because it's important for listeners to hear.
No doubt.
Awesome. Yep. Totally agree.
So kind of moving a little more back to the baseball and the performance side of things, kind of just seeing where the game is going, and you mentioned before, you both of you did, how different things are in terms of, like, maybe back then if you didn't have the quote-unquote God-given ability. Like, if you threw 82 in 2005 and you were in high school, they would have said, okay, that's just what you're able to throw. Now it's like, okay, you throw 82. It's like, okay, well, we can get you to 88 by next season if you do this during the offseason. How is the game evolving in terms of, like, 95 is almost normal now at the big league level, right? Like, it used to be like fire would come across the screen when the radar would come up on Fox. And now it's like, I think they ticked that up to like 97 or 98. 95 doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
From both your perspective, whoever wants to answer this first, like, how is the game evolving, and where do you see it going from here? Like, what's to come if you want to take your crystal ball out and kind of give your opinion on that? Dallas, you
want to
take this one first?
I would say, as a player perspective, the only way that this game continues to go is up, because that's human capability. We are only going to continue to get bigger, faster, stronger. And we can get into the weeds on why injuries occur, why certain specific injuries occur. I do believe that a lot of that can just be naturally contributed to the human body exceeding its limits at a certain point in time, and we have to continue to break down those barriers through training and preparation to be able to withstand the torque that we are putting on the human body. That being said, 95 is a prerequisite to be in a bullpen in the big leagues.
It's crazy,
that or you better be a lefty who can figure it out. And these days you're gonna have to figure it out. You got to be able to get a righty out too, because they're not just gonna give you that one lefty anymore. That ain't gonna happen. So as far as being able to train the areas of need, velocity. Why velocity? Because velocity, well, because you have a zone in which you have to execute within. If you throw really hard, you have a better chance of getting away with a mistake. If you don't throw really hard and you have to throw it within that same zone, well, because guys are facing, on average, guys who throw a lot harder than you, the game gets a lot more difficult for you as a pitcher if you're not throwing 95. You have to be extra fine in your approach. You have to have a true understanding of movement, of tunneling, of pitch presentation, of what effective velocity is, how to achieve effective velocity. You have to understand the art form on a different level as opposed to somebody who might be able to outstuff major league hitters. And that is something that I see existing. Is there are a, I believe there's a greater body of players that can outstuff people initially than there were before, because even some of the anomalies who were blowing 98 back in the day, they didn't have a real clue where it was going at time. And the same rang true. If you put it down the middle, it was going to end up in Souvenir City. And that can still ring true to some extent today. But the way the game is going with the technology and the evolution of the human body, you pair those two things together, we are in the Ivan Drago days. We've got the Russian nightmare on the treadmill hooked up to every single technological modality we can, assessing lung intake, oxygen capacity, spin efficiency on my liver when I start running at 55,000 feet, or what, I don't know. You can figure it out, though. That's where the game is going.
Just, Rob, before you go on, I just want to say one thing before
you talk about that. Yep.
Real quick. So you mentioned the Ivan Drago, and I want to say one thing. I am a very big, I'm very predicated on the fact that we can keep it simple in terms of strength training, right? Like, you know, sprint, lift, whatever. That doesn't mean we can't measure what those things are doing for us. People need to just this is one thing I wanted to comment on that you brought up. Like, split the idea that you can't measure stuff, and if you measure stuff, you're being too sophisticated and going away from the basics. All I wanted to say. Rob, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, I think that's all great. I love hearing Dallas talk about that because so many people don't understand why velocity is important, and he summed it up really, really well. Probably some of the bigger areas now that folks are focusing on, because there are actually fewer fastballs being seen because people are expecting it and they're all swinging for the fences when they see it because it's so much harder to hit. But the idea of pitch design and understanding swing path and things like that are kind of areas that can be overlooked if you're just focusing on throwing hard. But obviously throwing hard is the prerequisite to getting looks at either a college level or a pro level or at a high level pro level. But the ability to read, I was listening to Cressy's podcast with Kyle Hendricks, who isn't a hard thrower. The way he goes about it is, number one, mental game, just executing a good pitch. He obviously has less margin of error.
Eat swings.
Reading swings. I mean, he spends time talking to hitting guys,
yes,
and then watching the swing path and knowing that, hey, my two seam isn't going to play here. I'm going to have to throw elevated four seams, even though I don't throw hard, because I'm going to have to get out of their swing path. So it's some real cool stuff.
Well, and that's the thing, is that doesn't matter to him in that moment in time, in that specific battle between he and the individual whose swing path tells him that the sinker, one of his best weapons, is not the play here. It doesn't matter that he no longer has or never had 95. What matters is he has the intellect, he has the pitch ability to understand that the swing path is such, so my hole or my area of operation is right here, up top, just above the hands, with a little truer ball flight, something that's going to spin and stay true, as opposed to something with less spin, with more movement, sinking right onto his barrel. The point is, that's something a Kyle Hendricks does, because Kyle Hendricks does not throw 97. That approach, the cerebral approach, might not be something that somebody that does throw 97, 98 pays attention to or takes. Why? Because his margin for error in that strike zone, in that 17-inch realm, is greater than it is for Kyle Hendricks. So instead of going, fastball, yep, sounds good, here it is, Kyle Hendricks goes, fastball, nope, sinker, bat, plath, I don't like that. His plane, where I need to operate, is up top here, because I can miss up with the curveball, I can miss up with the fastball if I don't get the swing, and then I can change eye level with the curveball down and away. Having never given him my best offering, yet probably something that would have led me down a dark path, which is that sinker right onto his barrel.
Totally agree. And if you can combine stuff with reading swings, you get
elite.
Pedro Martinez. Pedro.
Talk to me, Ninja.
Exactly. But exactly your point is, I mean, velo is a good way to make hitters have to make quick decisions. If you can dot up everything, you know, the hitter has to adjust to that in the zone. Sure, that's one way of getting it done. Or movement. I mean, movement is a way to shorten the hitter's attention, or hitter's ability to make a quick decision. And tunneling, too. If they think a pitch looks like another pitch, then their decision has to be quicker. But the easiest way to get a quick decision is throwing harder. I mean, your reaction time is less.
Yep. And something else I wanted to say to the point about velocity, the reason that I think we're not starting at, well, there's a couple reasons. One of the things to think about is it's not the lack of velocity on the breaking balls, or it's not the movement on the breaking balls. It is the addition of velocity to the breaking ball with the movement that you're now seeing with the breaking ball. So if everybody's grown up hitting fastballs, well, that's a pitch that they see a lot. So that's a pitch they probably have a pretty good shot at. If everybody's grown up striking out on the pitches that move, what if I told you could throw one of those strikeout pitches that moves as hard as the fastballs these guys see? What would you say to that? You'd probably listen, huh? Well, that is where we are at, folks. That is what we just saw. Garrett Cole get paid damn near $500 million because he's able to spin it at a level that other folk, like, he throws his slider, folks, harder than I was featuring a fastball. Those are factual. That's a factual statement.
Yeah,
you had a front row seat to. Yeah, you had a front row seat to Blake Treinen last year. Bro. Oh my God.
Yeah. The used to call him the witch, right? And then he said he didn't.
Yes,
like that,
exactly. And then he did not like it. Yeah.
You meant it. Meant it with the utmost praise. We all knew that.
I absolutely did. Yep. He was just. I mean, it was too wicked. It was too wicked for the game, but that's exactly where we're going. I mean, you have Jordan Hicks throwing a, 104 with movement and then a slider that just drops off.
Yeah. It's not just off the speed anymore. It's like you said, you guys were alluding to, it's the movement. You have guys like Gerrit Cole or, guys like DeGrom that are literally throwing 98 miles an hour and spotting up and throwing, 94. DeGrom throws a 94 mile an hour slider. Like, in what world is that fair?
and where he wants to, and where he wants to throw.
That's exactly right.
Just to piggyback on Rob's comment, that's the Pedro. The Pedro. That's the elite. That is what happens when you start to combine the institutional knowledge, the ability, and the stuff, the God-given tools, and that is where you sit back and you just enjoy. And I think right now we are in a great place in the sport to be able to sit back and enjoy talent and athletes that are taking advantage of the technology and that are taking advantage of the information in the effective ways and using it to sharpen their skills and put them on display. Because baseball, in my opinion, has never, ever, ever had as much talent in the game as we have right now.
Yeah. I love Dallas. You're awesome, man. That was exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely. What you guys just said, I couldn't have imagined that question getting answered any better, but, it's just so fun to watch, the level of the athletes that are coming up, whether it's hitters and understanding, you guys are pitching guys, we're talking about that, but even understanding how talented these hitters are to hit the level of pitching that is kind of evolving and how, where it's going to, you guys are hitting these 94 mile an hour sliders. Guys are hitting, or maybe not that much right now, but they'll get it. Jordan Hicks, 104 mile an hour,
they're hitting it. If you got somebody down in the tunnel sitting next to a trash can with a baseball bat.
Hey, I'm a Yankee.
I was just going to say, fuck all hitters.
I'm cool with that trip. I'm a Yankee guy. So I'm cool with it. So I like to always give my guests a little chance to kind of take the floor and kind of put a bow on things that we talked about and then leave us with some parting thoughts. So whoever wants to go first on that, I wanted to open the floor to you guys on kind of, what you had for us parting thought wise or kind of want to, how you wanted to wrap up what we talked about. So
I bow to the ninja.
Oh, I mean, my philosophy is exactly what Dallas just said. I mean, there's a point where you just have to enjoy the game and understand that these players are just, off the charts, taking advantage of the technology out there, taking advantage of strength and conditioning, the knowledge that's out there, the, advanced metrics. It's crazy how good the game is. And I think sometimes there are folks that played the game a long time ago that want to say, back in my day, it was like this and back, people are doing what they do for a reason. And Dallas just summed it up fantastically. And I just want to echo the, I think for parents out there that are listening to it, please take our advice on kind of what we said.
Yes. Get invested for parents, get invested in your child's, in your child's life and what they're doing, the things that you are financially investing in, emotionally invest in those as well, because you're going to get way more out of that. I've already found, like I said, she's a little over 2 years old and I get way more out of going to gym class with her than I do hoping that she finds something about it that she loves that could one day find her on a podium draped in gold. Like, that's not the end game, man. The end game is watching her grow, watching her have fun, and knowing that I can play a small part in that just by paying attention enough, being involved enough to know when I should probably lay out. And I think you can get a real handle on that if you pay attention. And to the young athletes that might be listening to this, something that Rob said is so true. You have to take care of yourself and your career. So when your buddies want to go out and hang out and they want to go play around and they want to go do this and that, you might have 100 balls that you need to hit in the cage before that happens. And then the sun might be going down and you might not have the opportunity to go get in trouble that you would have had if you wouldn't have just hit those 100 balls or taken those 100 ground balls or caught those 100 passes, whatever it may be. So invest in yourselves, pay attention, but let the passion and love for the game take over. You'll get a lot more out of it.
Hey, and to broadcasters out there, I mean, I take a cue from Dallas. I mean, enjoy the game, understand the game today, and have the enthusiasm for the game and be a great ambassador. I get tired of hearing how things were back in my day. The enthusiasm is going to grow the game. And I just love hearing what you just said. I mean, it's fantastic. You're a great ambassador for the game.
I appreciate that very much, sir. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I agree, you know, 1,000%. It's really cool to even see, like, you know, Dallas even say, like, thank you to, you know, letting, you know, me have a conversation with you about the mechanics of sprinting and what we talked about. Like, you know, I could never imagine a former big leaguer, like, you know, giving me that chance to talk about what I do and the level of the science behind the sprinting and being so open-minded to it. And I came away and I learned something. And at the end of the day, I got to interact with you, which made me better. So, you know, thank you to guys like you and Rob for letting a strength coach kind of get, you know, deeper involved into the game of baseball. And it's been fun. So guys like you are a big part of, you know, that being able to happen. So thank you, the both of you, for that. And also thank you for coming on, because this was awesome. And I'm really excited to get this one out.
Yeah, right on. Thanks for having awesome, me, man. I enjoyed both you gentlemen very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see y'all.
Take care. All right.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles and Management Podcast, brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DeFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.